From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, it's The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, HBO lays out its streaming plans and throws down the gauntlet against Netflix and other rivals. Then Casey Lemons, director of the new movie about Harriet Tubman, says she and her cast felt the presence of the abolitionist on the set.
There were times when it was very meditative and we were all extremely in the moment and it felt incredibly real and honestly, incredibly graced.
And we introduce you to a 20-year-old singer who is wise and talented beyond her years. All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Over the next couple of months, streaming giants like Netflix are going to have some pretty big competition. Besides Disney+, perhaps the most formidable newcomer is HBO Max. It's set to launch next May. And unlike the sparse offerings unveiled so far by Apple for its new streaming service, HBO Max just announced some very ambitious plans for what it has in store. Dan Holloway is executive editor for TV at Variety. Dan, welcome to The Frame.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So HBO Max just made a big announcement of catalog content, new shows. What's the overall takeaway on their ambitions for their new streaming platform?
I think the overall takeaway, John, is that it is big. It has a lot of content to offer. They are projecting more than 50 original series to debut on the service in its first year. That's in addition to a lot of library content, and it's a lot of different kinds of library content, from Sesame Street to Friends to South Park to The Big Bang Theory to every Batman and Superman movie ever made. It's a vast library. It's a big offering, but it also has a high price point for the consumer.
Are these series that will only be available on HBO's new streaming service? Might they be available on the pay channel itself? What's the overlap and how many of these things are unique to streaming?
You're touching on a broader point of confusion, I think, that is out there right now about HBO Max and its relationship to existing HBO customers. Zeroing in on these original programs, they will just be available to watch on HBO Max. They will not be available to watch, we're told, on HBO's linear channel. But if you are an HBO subscriber, you will presumably have access to HBO Max. So you will still be able to access these shows, just not through HBO on television.
Yeah, but not all HBO subscribers are alike. I was, until very recently, a DirecTV subscriber. That's where I got HBO. Now I've switched over to Charter Cable because DirecTV is part of the Time Warner empire. Does that mean I'm going to have to pay for this when it launches in May?
You, as a Charter Cable subscriber, should be fine, but HBO does not have all of its deals done with all of its affiliates. We're not entirely sure which affiliates' deals aren't done yet, but there's a lot of question, particularly for people who are subscribing to HBO through other direct-to-consumer services outside of the cable universe. So let's say, for instance, that you subscribe to HBO Now through Amazon Channels, which is Amazon's direct-to-consumer TV channel offering. It is unclear whether you will have access to HBO Max. HBO has to go through, and all of their affiliates and distribution partners, like Amazon, like Hulu, and every single cable provider, they have to go through and hammer out those deals with all of those affiliates, with all of those distributors, to make sure that you will have access to it. They are saying that they are optimistic that those deals will get done by May, but being optimistic about it is not the same thing as the ink being dry on those contracts.
We're talking with Dan Holloway, the executive editor for TV at Variety. HBO Max is not going to be cheap. It's going to be triple the price of Apple's new streaming service. What is the play here in terms of how much it's going to cost and how much of that money is going to go to paying for all of this new content?
They're basically married to their $14.99 a month price tag because that's basically what people pay for HBO. So they can't go around offering something that includes HBO for less than what consumers are paying through their cable providers, it would violate their distribution contracts. And that's going to be a high barrier to entry for a lot of consumers, especially when you've got Disney Plus with a similarly large content offering entering the market in November at $6.99 per month. As far as where that money is going, AT&T is not expecting this thing to drive revenue for 5 years. And they are expecting that by 2025, they'll be turning around $1 billion per year. And that estimate of that much revenue is really based on, one, projections of adding 16 million subscribers, and two, revenue that would come from an ad-supported version of this that there are no specific plans for yet, and that they are saying will be rolled out in 2021.
According to some of the announcements, HBO Max could be making as many as 50 new shows in a couple of years, and that's obviously a lot more than they're making for their cable channel. Is this a fundamental pivot that suggests maybe that cable and satellite TV is no longer something that's going to grow and that the future really is in streaming?
That is basically a foregone conclusion at this point. John Stankey talked about how he believes we are now at peak scripted television development across the industry. This is not a new idea. John Landgraf at FX, who runs that network, has been talking about this for years. The problem with the predictions of peak television is that the amount of television being made continues to increase. But Stankey said he believes that we're at the peak right now and that we will start to see the curve upward in terms of number of hours of scripted programming being developed begin to flatten out as the cable universe contracts. And I think that if you look at the number of people who are subscribing to the traditional cable bundle, it continues to decrease. No one is expecting that to level off anytime soon. No one is expecting that to reverse course anytime soon. These companies like Disney, like Warner, who for the last 20, 25 years have been, you know, driven primarily, much more so than by movies or any other form of media, by making money in the traditional pay TV ecosystem, are now pivoting hard toward direct to consumer. And that's essentially what this represents.
Dan Holloway is executive editor for TV at Variety. For more industry news, go to variety.com. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, John.
Coming up next on The Frame, Harriet Tubman died more than a century ago. A new film celebrates the abolitionist's life. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. If you're wondering why it took until 2019 for a movie to be made about the life of Harriet Tubman, well, so are we. The abolitionist and suffragist escaped slavery, repeatedly traveled back to rescue dozens of other enslaved people through the Underground Railroad, and became the first woman to lead an armed assault during the Civil War. Tubman may not yet be on the $20 bill, but she is the focus of the new film, Harriet. The movie is directed and co-written by Casey Lemons and stars British actress Cynthia Erivo. Much of the shoot took place in Virginia during a particularly cold autumn, which Erivo says helped get her into character.
It was sort of imperative for me to try and do as much as I possibly could, as authentically as I could do it. So I sort of opted out of the wetsuit, opted out of any like extra warming things whilst I was doing the activities, just because I didn't want to feel comfortable, really. I liked the uncomfortability of the work that I was doing, because I felt like it made me I guess it gave me the space to be more connected to her, connected to what she may have gone through, so that the reaction was genuine and it felt real.
Yeah, Cynthia talks about removing the artifice between she and Harriet, which I love that particular phrase. Mm-hmm. I think that she wanted to be extremely connected at the time. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm very worried about my actor, and you know, I need her, so you know, I'm very protective. And, you know, I'm out in a boat in the water, you know, shivering, and I've got a coat on, you know, and she's in the water with no wetsuit on. So, yeah, it was uncomfortable.
So what does that mean for you, Casey, if your actor is trying to remove the artifice of playing a character? What does that mean in terms of how you're telling the story? Because you are making a movie, it's a narrative film. How do you remind yourself about the essential truth that you're trying to get at with all the artifice that essentially surrounds any movie like this?
I think that there were times when it was very meditative and we were all extremely in the moment and it felt incredibly real and honestly incredibly graced. And then, but as a filmmaker, yeah, you know the crew's back there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the artifice is what we live in and the reality is what we create. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very conscious of both, you know, I'm very conscious of both, but I need to believe it. I need to believe what I'm seeing. And that's what Cynthia brought to me, you know, was I was able to believe the performance all the time.
Casey, when you were talking with your colleague, screenwriter Greg Allen Howard, about the story that you want to tell, what did you focus in on? What were the things that were essential to the movie you wanted to make? And what are the things that you had to cast aside because you don't have the time or space to address them?
Well, Greg had written his script a long time before I came on.
So you inherited his?
I inherited his script, which was very, like, groundbreaking and way ahead of its time in terms of kind of presenting Harriet Tubman as this kind of action heroine, you know? So I wanted to stay true to that. But at the time that Gregory wrote the script, I don't know how important it was for it to be the real Harriet Tubman story.
What do you mean by that?
It was an adventure story, a wonderful, heart-pounding adventure story where the heroine happened to be Harriet Tubman. But I felt that it needed to be Harriet Tubman. You know what I mean? The details of who she was, the details of her family, for instance, were kind of, you know, he had made up a lot of stuff about her background, her family, what had happened to them. And especially once I did the research, I realized that the story of her real family, the story of her real background, and some of the actual historical facts were more interesting. And I really wanted to bring that texture and that reality to her story and to really present this community of enslaved African Americans and just all the nuances of the times.
We're talking with Casey Lemons, the writer-director of Harriet, and Cynthia Riva, who plays Harriet Tubman in the film. I want to play a clip from the movie. This is a scene where Harriet, who is played by Cynthia, is talking with William Still, who is played by Leslie Odom Jr.
Rescuing slaves requires skill and careful planning. It requires reading, Harriet. Can you read a sign or a map? Can you read it all?
I put my attention on trying to hear God's voice more clearly.
Do you know what would happen if you got caught? They would torture you until you pointed them right to this office. You got lucky, Harriet. And there's nothing more you can do.
Don't you tell me what I can't do. I made it this far on my own. God was watching, but my feet was my own. Running, bleeding, climbing, nearly drowned, nothing to eat for days and days, man. I made it. So don't you tell me what I can't do.
That could be a woman in 2019. And obviously, Harriet Tubman is an African-American slave, but this is as contemporary as any movie can be.
Mm-hmm. We really didn't want to look at it nostalgically.
No.
Well, we wanted it to feel very present and, mm-hmm. and you know, very contemporary, like you had lunch with her,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
like you knew her, you know, got to really access her.
Yeah. I think it was the most important thing for me was really about trying to bring her to life, you know, bringing the human being, the woman, to screen so that we could share her in a real sense. I think that people don't know that she had emotions and she had feelings and she could get angry and she could, you know, be joyous and all of those things.
Heartbroken,
all of those things that we as humans experience. And so I wanted to be as fully emotionally available as I possibly could so that those feelings are real. We feel them. I felt them. The idea that someone tells you you can't do something and you're like, I know I can do something. I know I can do it. So I don't need you telling me that I can't. And, you know, it just felt like one of the most... That was definitely a scene I was looking forward to shooting because it felt like it was so connected to the real world where I was in my time, which is kind of cool.
Not every actor gets to co-write his or her ballad or theme song, but Cynthia, you wrote a song called Stand Up with Joshua Campbell.
Yes.
I'm going to play a little bit from it.
Thank you.
I've been walking with my face turned to the sun. Weight on my shoulders, a bullet in my gun.
Oh, I got eyes. Music is, I like to think, is my second language, so I use it a lot to communicate, to tell stories. I write my own music, so it means I get to speak the things that I probably couldn't speak out loud through music. And so to get the chance to, I guess, use my voice for her, move myself out the way and find a voice that felt right for Harriet to use in the purest sense for communication was really special. And where we were, it just felt like it was a little bit like hallowed ground. We were on a plantation, so to be able to sing those spirituals felt really empowering and special. And I hope that it plays a huge role for people to understand what the story is about, to understand what these people were going through. I feel like when you sing, you expose yourself completely. And in doing that in this, I hope that that's what people have seen, you know, a person who is exposed and whose heart is on their sleeve and who is trying to communicate something they cannot say.
When that Pharaoh chariot comes, I'm gonna leave you. I'm bound for the promised land. I'm gonna leave you. I'm sorry, I'm gonna leave you. Farewell, oh farewell. But I'll meet you in the morning.
Casey, music plays such a central part in the story of this film. What was your guiding principle about songs and what they meant to the characters in the story?
It was super important to understand and for the audience to understand that these songs were a form of communication, some of which was incredibly intricate, and it was coded so that the slave masters and the overseers would not understand the purpose of the song. And so it was a form of communication. It was, yes, a form of comfort and community, but it was also communication. And in Harriet's story, it's very important that this is a weapon of resistance, that she uses her voice in those songs to call to the enslaved people, I'm here. Do you dare to come? Are you ready? And very intricately, you know, she had some verses meant, don't come yet, it's not safe. It depended on the verses she sang in the song, especially Go Down Moses, which was the song she primarily sang to call to the enslaved people to run.
When you think about why this story hasn't been told before, and the fact that it took this long to tell this story and that it's coming out now, does the timing seem to be providential?
Yeah, it's amazing because we didn't know that or think about it. We're just trying to get a movie made, and Cynthia had been on it before I was even on it. Mm-hmm. But Cynthia and I like to think it's when Harriet wanted the story told.
Mm-hmm. Really? That she spoke to you even from beyond?
Oh, well, I definitely felt that all the time. I think we both did. And honestly, many of us did that worked on the movie. It was a constant presence.
Yeah.
But certainly in my life, I can use the word imagined if you want. I imagined that I was talking to her all the time.
Casey Lemons co-wrote and directed Harriet. Cynthia Erivo plays Harriet Tubman in the film. Casey and Cynthia, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Harriet opens in theaters on November 1st. Up next on The Frame, meet the 20-year-old musical artist who goes by the name Ayoni. I'm John Horn, and this is The Frame. The great Nina Simone wrote a song called To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. And that title certainly applies to the 20-year-old singer, songwriter, and producer who goes by the single name of Ayoni. She has lived in and out of the United States, including Barbados, Florida, Singapore, and Northern California. She settled in Los Angeles 2 years ago to attend USC's Thornton School of Music. Ayoni has now produced a remarkably mature and worldly debut album titled Iridescent.
Thank you. I'm Ioni. I'm an artist, songwriter, and producer. Iridescent, the word just completely fascinated me. The definition, which I might not get exact, is seemingly luminous colors that change when seen from different angles. And so that's powerful to me because at the time of my life, this record is about my first year away from home and university, experiencing heartbreak. I was experiencing joy. I was experiencing love. I was experiencing loneliness. You're never gonna face me. But all of those things are powerful in their own right, and telling the story of how I came to be today and how I'm still here and still standing, that's iridescent. Like, iridescent to me is like a comeback. It's a revolution. It's resilience. And I feel like the record just completely shows off that and persevering, but, you know, with style. A little bit of my background. Born in Barbados. My dad is from England, like born in England, but he also moved there when he was a kid. And my mom is Bajan as well. Experiencing America has definitely been something that's influenced, I guess, just my identity and how I see myself, because I feel like universally to be a Black woman is a very distinct experience, but I do feel like given America's history and constant political state, it's always feels a little different to be in the States. And, you know, like sometimes I feel like being a Black woman in the States, it's constantly a battle, and like everything I do just becomes political because of who I am and how I'm viewed. And I feel like in my music, as lighthearted as I like to make it, there is still a very serious, you know, point to whatever I have to say because of who I am and like how I've come to be. So a song I would like to talk a little bit more about is Wife You Up. I was very intentional putting it first because it's my first really overwhelming experience with catcalling.
Do you think I was made for your pleasure? You want a playground made of skin?
One night I went out with a friend and we went to Hollywood. And from the time we got on the metro, it's like I had like five different experiences with people like following me, like trying to talk to me, like just like really, really invading like my boundaries.
'Cause I am not your property, plaything with no warranty.
And as the night went on, it just kind of got worse. And it was like, we just left. I was so, so, so pissed when I wrote Wife You Up. And so I was like, okay, I want to make a piece. Like, I want to write a song that gives that rage to the people a little bit so that, you know, we have something that's for us and for those moments that makes us feel powerful, like we can rise above it.
'Cause I won't be yours, so don't be a bother, can be damn sure that there's impending karma. I'm never gonna be the one to wife you up. I'm never gonna.
There's kind of a lot of like fun to the song, a lot of like joke to it, and it's kind of sarcastic at points, and I'm like, that's kind of how I approach all of that. It's just like, this is ridiculous. Leave me the hell alone and let me flourish. And I want you to hear how ridiculous you sound.
To think I could ever be yours. To think I could ever be yours. To think I could ever be anything other than mine. Will you love me, chromatome? Illumine your baby in the divine light.
Divine really started the understanding of the power of this record for me. Like, I wrote it when I was like a couple months into an amazing grounding relationship that I'm in. And I was really writing initially about, you know, the love that I'm receiving that I feel like I don't get from the world as a Black woman. It's like, I feel like I'm experiencing this for the first time.
Just hold my head up to your chest now, baby. No bolino, flaunt me on your crest now, baby.
in my head, I was like, okay, I'm intending this for, you know, other black women like me. Like, we're strong, we're divine. And then once I started playing it live, it was like, no. We are bumping this. Like, this is divine for so much more than just me. Like, this is divine for so much community for me, because it's like the people who push me and inspire me and make me feel divine, make me feel strong and resilient in this world are my queer friends, are my black friends, like are my friends from so many different places where we all have our own experiences with just not feeling like we are enough. And to reclaim that in a powerful way and kind of make this song that for me feels like an anthem is like taking my power back. And every time I sing it, I feel like I'm taking my power back just by experiencing joy and standing in it. And whoever it resonates with, amazing.
Aoyoni's album Iridescent is available on your favorite streaming service. That story was produced by The Frame's Paul Ratliff. And that is it for today. I'm John Horn at the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC. We're back here tomorrow.